Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, The Dynasty of Anshuman, Text 32. Yadi Ayam kriyate bhakshyas tarhe mam kada purvata na jivishye vina yena kshanam cha Maritakam yata yadyayam kriyate bhakshyas tarhimam kada purvata na jivishye vinayena kshanam cha maritakam yata Yadi, if I am this Brahman, kriyate, is accepted, bhakshya, as eatable, tarhi, then, mam, me, kada, eat, purvata, before that, na, not, jivishye, I shall live, vina, without, yena, whom, my husband, kshanam cha, even for a moment, mritakam, a dead body, Yata, like. Translation. Without my husband, I cannot live for a moment. If you want to eat my husband, it would be better to eat me first. For without my husband, I am as good as a dead body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Vedic culture, there is a system known as sati, or saha marana, in which a woman dies with her husband. According to the system, if the husband dies, the wife will voluntarily die by falling in the blazing funeral pyre of her husband. Here, in this verse, the feelings inherent in this culture are expressed by the wife of the Brahmin. A woman without a husband is like a dead body. Therefore, according to Vedic culture, a girl must be married. This is the responsibility of her father. A girl may be given in charity, and a husband may have more than one wife, but a girl must be married. This is Vedic culture. A woman is supposed to be always dependent. In her childhood, she is dependent on her father, in youth, on her husband, and in old age, on her elderly sons. According to Manusamhita, she is never independent. Independence for a woman means miserable life. In this age, so many girls are unmarried and falsely imagining themselves free, but their life is miserable. Here is an instance in which a woman felt that without her husband, she was nothing but a dead body. Yadyayam kriyate bhakshyas tarhimam kadapurvata najivishye vinayena kshanam cha mritakam yata. Without my husband, I cannot live for a moment. If you want to eat my husband, it would be better to eat me first. For without my husband, I am as good as a dead body. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bastyatya Deshatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakavatribhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha padidanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. What a suitable verse for a sannyasi to give a class on. Just what we were looking for. Well, anyway, here it is. Here it is. What can we do? Well, of course, what Srila Prabhupada says, not just we must accept as right because he's our founder, acharya, or our spiritual master, supreme siksha guru for everyone in ISKCON, but whatever Prabhupada says is just right. It's just right. And, of course, basically exactly what Prabhupada has said here in the purport, he said on quite a number of occasions, I think this is well known to anyone who's read fairly extensively Prabhupada's books and listened to him, etc. This is not news for us, or Prabhupada's understanding and position is not news for us. And of course it's very important, it's just essential, really, to get these ideas. Now, this King Saul Das, I won't go through the story, I imagine you've been following the classes for the last some time, so you know the story. It's a very interesting situation, sort of on the surface a mistaken curse. Anyway, let's not go down that path too much, but it appears to be a mistaken curse from Vasishta. But of course everyone gets what they deserve anyway, even if on a certain level or on the surface there's some, arguably some mistake there, but on a deeper level, Prabhupada said, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. So this King Saul Das, who's been transformed into a rakshasa, a cannibal, and like a very, I mean, we don't want to cheapen it, but sort of like very enthusiastic cannibal. He's just really into it. And he's attracted to eating the Brahmin, but here is the wife of the Brahmin appealing to him and bringing up this very important and interesting point for ladies in Krishna consciousness and for all of us to understand in Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada says right at the beginning of the purport, in the Vedic culture, there's a system known as sati or saha marana, in which a woman dies with her husband. So I think we've all heard of this idea. We've all heard of this idea, I'm sure. Sati, in which as this lady, the wife of the Brahmin, is expressing that if her husband should die, then for her, living would be worse than dying. So better to die. This is the underlying, as Prabhupada says, the feelings inherent in this culture, the culture of sati, or sahamarana, of the wife giving up her life. If the husband passes away before her, which in so many cases is the case, because from what we hear in terms of life expectancy, ladies are prone to live longer than men by a little bit, which is an interesting point in itself. But anyway, so if that should happen, or when that happens, then the wife, the feelings inherent, the feelings there, just like that, just like one revolutionary said, I forget who it was, but in the last 100 years, if you're living under a really bad government, then if living becomes worse than dying, then revolution can occur. But if living is not as bad as dying, if you can sort of hang in there and just tolerate, then just carry on and don't have a revolution. But if living becomes worse than dying, means very drastic, then revolution can really occur. So for in Vedic culture and in Vedic times, this was happening, this was common as far as we understand. It was very common that if the husband passed away before the wife, then the wife would, as Prabhupada says here, voluntarily die by falling in the funeral pyre, the cremation fire of the husband. And even personally, actually, I met one gentleman on a train. We were traveling by train many years ago, but I remember it very vividly, from Jaipur to Delhi, at least 20 years ago, probably 25, and this one businessman, pious Hindu gentleman, was in the same little area as us, and we were discussing Krishna consciousness and these things, and somehow this subject came up, and he, with obvious pride, said, "My mother was a sati." Yeah. And that really stuck in my mind, and I haven't forgotten it. Forget so many things, but that was very striking. My mother was a sati. So if this was 25 years ago and he was probably 50 years old, means that maybe 40 or 50 years ago, whatever, this lady did it. On the other hand, another interesting little experience, also many years ago, probably 20 or something like that, we were in Unchagaon in Vrajmandala, Lalitagram, the said to be the birthplace of Lalita Devi, and we were invited into one family's house, just very, you know, very village type situation, very village type of house, and just very, very kind of ethnic local family. And so we were there, and we were having charge, and the family was there, and they were very nice. They were very nice. And the daughter was there. She was probably plus or minus 12 or so, something along those lines. And somehow the subject of chastity and you know, the upright nature of an upright lady, of a woman of real quality of character, somehow that came up in the discussion, and the mother pointed to her daughter and said, "She will be a sati." And the daughter looked at her like, "What are you saying?" in a bit of shock. Yes. So, of course, there are certain factors involved. It's not just a simple little thing that you just jump in the fire, you know, away we go. There are deep, very deep factors involved. And in order to sort of get a little perspective on that, I thought I would read two verses from the ninth canto. In fact, actually, from the next chapter, chapter 10, the Pastimes of Lord Ram, the last two verses of chapter 10 of this ninth canto. So talking about Lord Ram and Mother Sita. So first of all, Lord Ram, Ekapatni Vratadaro Rajarshi Charita Shuchi Swadharmam Grihamediyam Shikshayan Swayam Acharat. Translation: Lord Ramachandra took a vow to accept only one wife and have no connection with any other women. He was a saintly king, and everything in his character was good, untinged by qualities like anger. He taught good behavior for everyone, especially for householders, in terms of Varnashram Dharma. Thus he taught the general public by his personal activities. I won't read the whole purport. But Srila Prabhupada explores the idea of Ekapatni Vrata. Lord Ram took a vow, solemn vow, even though in those days it was not uncommon, particularly for very powerful Kshatriya men, extremely capable men, to accept more than one wife was not unusual at all. But Prabhupada he emphasizes this point, Ekapatni Vrata, that Lord Ram, when he married, he took that vow. One wife, that's all. And he never looked at another woman. He never talked to another woman. He never thought about another woman. It was that type of dedication in Krishna conscious or Ram conscious family life. And Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that Lord Ram displayed this by when Mother Sita was kidnapped, he rescued her. Prabhupada makes the point, He could have just manifested another seater or hundreds of replacement seaters, but he didn't. He took the trouble, and at least from the perspective of an ordinary person, for God, you know, nothing is much trouble really, but he took the trouble, what would have been trouble for an ordinary householder, to rescue his wife against all odds. Yeah, you all know that story. And he did it. So like this, Lord Ram demonstrated, he showed his dedication to his Krishna conscious or Ram conscious wife. And then Mother Sita, the next verse, it's the last verse of the chapter, Premnanuvritcha Shilena Prashraya Vanata Sati Biahriya Chabhavagya Bartu Sita Haran Mana. Mother Sita was very submissive, faithful, shy, and chaste, always understanding the attitude of her husband. Thus, by her character and her love and service, she completely attracted the mind of the Lord. So, well, and Prabhupada makes the point actually in the purport that as Lord Ram is the ideal husband, Mother Sita is the ideal wife, such a combination makes family life very happy. And goes on basically to say that if people would live like this, then the entire world would be heaven and there'd no longer be hellish conditions within this material world. So Lord Ram's ideal husband, Mother Sita's is ideal wife, even beyond ideal by human standards. Just perfection, you could say. And when, you know, it's easy to say, and sometimes, you know, in a sort of tongue-in-cheek or slightly joking way, we say to ladies, well, look, I mean, our ladies, if you want to do sati, you can do it. Anyway, excuse me. I mean, of course you can, actually. But, although it's illegal. Yeah. But, first of all, the woman has to be such a woman. And the husband has to be such a husband. You can't just put the sort of burden on the wives, go on, you should do sati. It's Vedic. And you should be Vedic. But when the husband is like Lord Ram, or at least, you know, something very outstanding as a Krishna conscious person and a human being, well, then it's more understandable or appreciable. When you have the association, just like when we had the association of Srila Prabhupada. Now, what a person! What a person! And when Srila Prabhupada left this world, I remember the day, or actually it was the morning after, we were in England, in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and the temple president called me into his room and told me that our GBC of the time had just phoned him and said that Srila Prabhupada had left this world. So, first of all, hearing that, it was just like unreal. It was just like, you know, how could it be? It's just not possible. Like if someone told you the Martians have landed and are taking over, it's just like, what? So first of all, at least for me, it was like, what? And, you know, a kind of stunning experience, actually, where you're just sort of partially immobilized, but then it all sunk in, and I mean, began to sink in more and more over some days. And the first thing that happened, one of the first things that happened was, in a certain sense, the movement ISKCON sort of stopped. It didn't exactly stop, but everyone, so many, at least the devotees there in England where I was, everyone was stunned. And so all the Sankirtan parties, there were numerous parties out traveling around the country distributing books. They all came back. We had kirtan, and that was all that was happening. Everyone was together having kirtan, having some Prabhupada katha. And it took some days before, again, a bit of momentum for sort of normal, the normal program of ISKCON really started getting going again, like book distribution and things like that. So when a person of, you know, such character leaves this world, it's a very stunning experience. It's a very devastating experience. So in Vedic culture, if the husband is like that, or something like that, and the relationship has been very intimate, in the broad sense, very intimate and close, and a real relationship, as we read with Mother Sita, always dedicated, completely dedicated to her husband, and he was dedicated to her because of her love, he was dedicated to her because of her love and her service to him. We're talking about a very rich and very deep transcendental relationship. And if one loses such a person, who, particularly if one has really, on an ongoing basis for many years, had just every day and practically all day had such wonderful exchanges and wonderful relationship, well, the loss, the feeling of loss, like we said, when living becomes worse than dying, then dying, it's not like, you know, for most people, dying, who me, die, it's just too much to digest. But it becomes sort of, you know, quite natural and not a matter of somehow stealing yourself, how could I do it? At least this is the understanding that I've managed to sort of gather. So yes, for sati to happen in that natural type of way, there has to be a certain type of woman of a certain character, and a certain type of husband of a certain character in Krishna consciousness, and then it can be such a glorious thing, actually, a very glorious thing. Not like, as we hear during the British time, at least, we hear, even Prabhupada mentions somewhere, that the practice of sati was still going on, but not so many of the ladies wanted to do it. And, you know, maybe because of their own character, or maybe you know, when their husband passed away. Anyway, let's not joke about it, but he just wasn't on that level. And the relationship just wasn't on that level. So what does she do? She carries on. But there was this practice of enforced sati. Enforced sati, that the relatives, some of the relatives, as the cremation is taking place, they would literally, physically grab her and throw her in. And if she would try to come out, because it takes a while, you know, it's not like in the movies. In the movies, someone is shot, bang, he's dead on the spot. It doesn't work like that. You know, my father, who was in the Second World War, told me that when people are shot, nobody just dies. I mean, unless a machine gun is taken to them and the body is sort of blown apart on the spot, it takes time. And he said the majority die from loss of blood. Yeah. Yeah, unless the heart is struck and, you know, just struck very powerfully. So, yeah, for a woman to die having been thrown onto the fire, they don't just die like that. It takes time. So they would try to come out and be pushed back in. So therefore the practice, as we understand, the British sort of ignored it for some time. But then after some time, there was so much pressure that, you know, these so many ladies, they just don't want to do it at all. So it was made illegal and they tried to stop it. So where are the ladies and where are the husbands? You know, that, of course, that's a good question. That's a very important question. I read an interesting thing on, would you believe, Facebook. I inhabit Facebook a little, not too much. Not too much, but anyway, I'm there somewhere. I read something a couple of, maybe 2 years ago, which it really struck me. A Prabhupada disciple means, you know, an elderly person, basically, who's been married to his wife since they were in their 20s. So it's probably, it might be 40 years, I'm sure it'd be at least 35 years. This devotee husband wrote a little thing on Facebook that my wife just gave me the greatest compliment she has ever given me in all our years together. My wife told me that, actually, you are quite a good husband. And he said, you know, you're so good that if we take birth again, I wouldn't mind having you as my husband again. And he said, I thought that was a great compliment. You know, of course, I've not been married in this lifetime. But having to deal with many, many, very many devotees, including many householders, we do get a little windows into what goes on. Well, we really do, actually. And we know that relationships like that between Sita and Ram, well, they're not even few and far between. They're just not. And in many cases, in my experience or what I've seen and heard is, in many cases, it's sometimes a bit of a struggle to just keep it going and to not become too frustrated, so you just split up. Well, yes. So here these types of things are being discussed. As we pointed out, Prabhupada has discussed in exactly these same terms on numerous occasions. This is not the only place. It is not a surprise to find these things, including Prabhupada goes so far as to give just a little bit of an analysis of female nature, or if not exactly female, well, it is of female nature, but not necessarily just that, but what is best for women, or most women, or generally, something along these lines. That for ladies it's best, Prabhupada says, a woman is supposed to be always dependent. Of course, this is Kali Yuga. It is the age of independence. Independence. You know, on all levels. I read some time ago, Prabhupada was saying, talking about India. First of all, India included what? Pakistan, right? Bangladesh. It included, I think it included Nepal, did it? And what else? You know, a few other places also, maybe, whatever they are. Various other places. But somehow or other, time went on and, you know, the British, and then the British left and left, sort of created a chaotic situation. And so Prabhupada's making the point that India has already been reducing over however many years, because different groupings, the Muslims and whoever else, they just want to be independent. And, you know, in many cases you can't blame them in a certain sense, because oftentimes the governments are not really competent or sympathetic enough or capable enough, and these groupings become frustrated. So, but Prabhupada makes the point, it's already broken up to some degree, a fair degree actually. And Prabhupada says, as time goes on, it will break up further. You know, the Punjab might be next. What do they call it? Khalistan? Is it Khalistan? Perhaps. Due course, Tamil Nadu. You know, they get a pretty upset every now and then about Lord Ram and, you know, the Dravidians versus the Aryans. So Prabhupada makes this point. In due course, India will break up further. And you've probably read or heard Prabhupada said, talking about the organization, the United Nations, that actually as time goes on, it's not that there are less flags, meaning less nations in New York, in the headquarters of the United Nations. It's not that the nations are uniting more and more, and the number of flags, because apparently they're all there in front of the United Nations building, it's not that the number of flags is becoming less. The number of flags is becoming more. So, and even at least, I read, it was many years ago, Prabhupada said, eventually India may end up being what is now Uttar Pradesh. So the tendency towards independence, that's the particular point I'm looking at here. It's such a strong tendency. It is such a strong tendency. It's amazing. Of course, it's there. On a foundational level, it's there because we want to be independent from Krishna. That's the root. But it comes out in different ways. The women want to be independent of the men. The children want to be independent of the parents. Different groupings of people in countries want to split off and have their own little countries. And these different types of things. But the root of it all is the tendency, not just the tendency, but the desire, the deeply held desire. We want to be independent from Krishna. Why Krishna? Why not me? This is the basic idea. This is material life in a very small nutshell, but it's true. So, for women, as Prabhupada says here, a woman is supposed to be always dependent in her childhood on her father, married life on the husband, and then in old age, the older children, sons, the older sons, to take care. Like that. And I thought I would mention something which you may well not be aware of, but it's important. It's about this the resolution from the GBC body, which was passed just a matter of weeks ago in Tirupati, about ladies becoming gurus. You're all aware. That's not news for anyone, is it? If it is, I think you're too disconnected. But it's there. And there was such a history behind it within the GBC body. In fact, of all the many decisions that the GBC body has made, there's no doubt, as a member of it for many years and having a lot of experience with these things, there's no doubt this subject got the most discussion and thought and debate for years. I think it was 14 years, if I remember correctly. Back and forth and back and forth. And in the end, you might not be aware of this, but at least a small subcommittee was made of, if I remember, well, definitely included were the two men, both sannyasis, and one, I mean, they're both very great devotees, but one of them is one of the very top philosophers in ISKCON, super exceptional devotee in all respects. So a subcommittee was made up of them and some of the ladies who were GBC members, and one or two others, there was maybe five, to really try to just go into this subject and come out with something conclusive, particularly in terms of what Prabhupada said. Very, very specifically in terms of what Prabhupada said. And in the end, after that subcommittee had been back and forth and met face to face, and things had been going on for, I think it was a year with them, The two men came, they all came, and the two men came back and told us, we have examined Prabhupada's statements again and again and again. As far as we can see, we've examined all of them which discuss the subject. And it seems like, you might think it's not a nice way to put it, but it seems like we have no alternative, according to what Prabhupada said. if ladies exhibit certain sufficient qualifications, we have no alternative but to allow them to function as gurus, because Prabhupada specifically said. But interesting point, important point, that the end conclusion was, like in terms of what Prabhupada says here, they should be in protected situations, either very stable family situation, or if for whatever reason there isn't a family situation, in very good sangha, and also managerially protected. That's in these terms, at least in relation to what Prabhupada is saying here, not just independent, do what we like. So what to say? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada came. Now, you know, I don't have much time due to life being what it is. Anyone would like to say something, Maharaj? Like to say, ask, say, comment? Give Maharaj the microphone. I think he wants to say something. Just please keep it brief, because I have to.
Concepts, the description of Saudas and after the Brahman. Here Prabhupada very clearly said that the feelings inherent in this culture,
right,
are expressed by the wife of the Brahman.
Yes. Yes.
It is quite important. It appears that it is like the desire of Prabhupada that this relation should be maintained, husband and wife. And again, not only this purpose, time to time purpose, that women should be dependent, shallow, with other parents.
Mm-hmm.
And your husband, and in old age, grown-up children.
Right.
This is very clear, no doubt. But then, if we are speaking of the subject matter, and it was, to me, it appears that you are looking that theme, in this language, about, also about driving, like glorious situation of Lord Ramchandra and glorious situation of Mother Sita.
Mm-hmm.
Then this it correct this type of feeling.
Uh-huh.
But here inherent, this is a here in this part, the feelings inherent in the culture are expressed.
Right. Yes.
For a wife, woman, not that he is the husband is too glorious, then he should be dependent. Clearly, for a wife, husband is always glorious. She is not supposed to judge the greatness of a husband. Rather, he should accept that he is very great.
That I was diluting. Okay. Well, just allow me to briefly respond. You know, I was trying to examine a few different elements in the picture presented here. But as far as in terms of what I was consciously doing or trying to do, I felt that I was definitely not trying to dilute. One thing I was saying like in the culture, in that culture, previously, it was natural that a woman would feel like that, and it was accepted like that. Like when Pandu passed away, there was the idea of Madri and Kunti, both of them entering the fire. And it was just like, yeah, they'll enter the fire. But Kunti decided not, almost like an austerity, to bring up the children. And elsewhere, I think it's the seventh canto? Prabhupada talks about the characteristics of a woman, the desirable qualities of a woman. And Prabhupada says that, and not Prabhupada, the Bhagavatam says that in this way, a wife should engage in the service of a husband who is not fallen. So, therefore, I was making the point that not all husbands now are like Lord Ram. You know, that's one thing, to be like Lord Ram. But to be like this king, I mean this Brahman rather, this Brahman. Such a wonderful person that there's a very natural and very deep relationship. Nowadays, there are many ladies who don't see their husbands like that. Am I right? I think I'm right. That's what they tell me. Many of them. So, it requires a certain caliber of woman, but it also requires a certain caliber of man for that sort of relationship to be there, like the Brahman and the wife here. Please forgive me if I don't go into it further, and if I actually stop the class here, because I have to urgently go. But that's just a simple answer to your point from my own perspective. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Go Premanande.